The waiting is over, folks. Science Friday Cephalopod Week is finally here. It's, of course, our annual cephalobration of all things mostly tentacled. And if you're as big a squid head as I am, you have tons to look forward to. Here to tell us all about it is Science Friday Seer of Cephalopod Week, Diana Montana. Welcome, Diana.
Thanks, Ira. Are you excited for Cephalopod Week?
Oh boy, am I. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It certainly is. Well, this year we have a bunch of things going on. We'll get to visit behind the scenes at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, play deep sea trivia, watch many documentaries, chat with real scientists, working with cephalopods every day, and a whole lot more. I am so incredibly excited for this year's celebration.
Me too. So, Diana, not only are you the Ceph Week maestro, but you're also the Science Friday trivia master. So, to kick things off, you're going to quiz me on my cephalopod know-how. Now, I know my cuttlefish from my Nautilus, but just in case, I've called in some backup. Playing with me today is our resident word nerd and host of our podcast Science Diction, Johanna Mayer. Welcome, Johanna.
Hey, Ira. It's good to be here.
Thank goodness you are here. Okay, Diana, I think we're finally ready for you.
Amazing. All right, so these are multiple choice questions, which all have to do with cephalopod word origins. First, I'll read a little description, and then I'll ask you a question. Then I'll read your multiple choice options. You two confer with each other on which answer you want to go for. If you get it right, you'll hear this sound. And if you get it wrong, I don't think it'll happen, but you'll hear this sound.
Wow. Jumping in to say this is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Okay, Diana, back to you.
All right, so here's question one. What do you call a tiny octopus with big eyes, flappy little ear-like fins, and that's cute as a button? In 2015, Stephanie Bush and her team at the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute were tasked to classify and name this newly caught and previously undescribed deep sea cephalopod. It's from the genus Australopithecus, and I need to know what name did they end up naming the species. So remember, this is a story from 2015, and it's either A, Californiana, for where it's collected and described, B, Lacina, after the Latin word for flap, C, Adorabilis, because it's just so dang cute, or D, Stephania, after Dr. Bush herself, who helped collect it.
I actually know this one.
Yeah, this was so cute, we could not know this
one. I know, I'm actually going to demand that we see a photo of this next time. It's C, Adorabilis, right, Ira?
Absolutely, Adorabilis. C, final answer.
What?
No.
The correct answer is A, Californiana.
No, it's not.
No.
That's not.
It can't be.
Here, let me tell you the full story, all right? So we're not exactly sure why they didn't end up going with Adorabilis, but if you've seen the Science Friday video, this is what they thought they were going to call it. But I guess not everyone in the scientific community thinks this creature is as lovable as the rest of us.
I feel so cheated.
Yeah, don't you feel cheated on that? I thought we had a lock on that.
I'm going to continue to call it Adorabilis.
Yeah, me too.
You should. You should. Well, so you two probably know some of this, but there's a whole branch of scientific study called taxonomy, and we have Carl Linnaeus to thank for our binomial or two-word naming system, where we basically just say the genus and species to refer to a specific animal, plant, or other living thing. These days, the International Code of Zoological Nomenclature is used by biologists to name species. And so there are 18 chapters to this code. There are 90 articles. So there's a lot of rules, and apparently picking the cutest name, it's not one of those rules.
Find me the rule for the appeals process on this.
Yeah, I will sign the petition. We're not off to a great start with this, Ira.
No, we'll do better.
All right, are you guys ready for question two?
Question two, go for it.
Redeem ourselves.
Yeah.
The origins of the word ink go way back. Originally, the word was enka, It was a shortening from the Latin and costum. And so special inks have special names, like sacrum and costum, which was a purple-red ink used by the Roman emperors to sign their important decrees. And it's actually made from shellfish. But they're not the only invertebrates that were used for inks. What color is named after the pigment collected from the ink sac of a common cuttlefish? Is it A, sepia, B, aquamarine, C, fuchsia, or D, umber?
Gee, I don't know this at all. What color
is umber again?
It's kind of like a yellowy brown.
Yeah. What do you think, Johanna?
As usual, I'm sort of at a loss, but I kind of have a hunch that it's sepia.
Okay. I'll go with you on sepia.
Why not? We have no better guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Final answer, A, sepia. Oh.
Hey.
Thank goodness.
That is the correct answer. Congratulations.
Yeah. Just like on my SATs, this is how I did it. Yeah.
Just guessed?
That's
one
it.
One on, one off. So sepia ink was pretty commonly used for writing, drawing, and any other of your penned needs in Greco-Roman civilization. Eventually, it was used in the 19th century to help warm up black and white photographs and help preserve the image longer. So that's why we use a sepia filter on Instagram. But you can also thank cephalopods for those old but still recognizable photographs of your great-great ancestors.
Huh.
Yeah.
And if you liked this teaser, we're going to have some more trivia for you over on the Science Diction podcast feed next week. So subscribe here for an extra dose of cephalopod wordplay.
Thanks, Diana and Johanna. Great game.
Thanks, Ira.
Thanks, Ira.